All right, well, welcome back, everybody. Today we're going to be discussing a very important subject. And the subject today is called Ayurveda and Gnostic Transformation with a very special guest speaker, Craig Williams. Thank you so much, Craig, for coming and joining us.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. I'm so excited to be on. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank you for taking time out of your day.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to start off first by introducing you to our listeners. So for those of you who don't know Craig Williams, he has a bachelor's degree in religious studies with a focus on Eastern religion, as well as a master's degree in Oriental medicine. He's a certified East-West herbalist through the member and is a member of the American Herbalist Guild. Now, he's also very trained in Ayurveda, yoga, Jyotish, Vedanta, and Tantra, with a lot of studies underneath David Frawley in the American Institute of Vedic Studies. Craig was also awarded the prestigious titles of Veda Kovig and Yogacharya. In addition, he is a certified Ayurvedic practitioner through NAMA and the Academy of Traditional Ayurveda. In addition, he's a certified sports conditioning coach through the National Academy of Sports Medicine, certified health coach, running coach, which I could definitely use a lot more running, but also a holistic fitness nutritionist and licensed acupuncturist. In addition, Craig is also an ordained bishop through the Ecclesia Gnostica Nigra and an author of the acclaimed books Entering the Desert, Cult of Golgotha, and Cave of the Numinous. So if any of you listeners haven't gotten a chance already, be sure to check out his blogs. One is called Transmissions from Kali Yuga, and the other is Ayurveda Austin. So again, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for that nice introduction.
Yeah, well, you know, when it's that impressive, you need to be sure that it's spoken.
Thank you so much.
So the first thing that I wanted to discuss is the term Gnosticism. I notice when I say this word to people, it conjures up a lot of confusion. But yes. I want to specifically ask about the explanation of Gnosticism as it would apply to people seeking spiritual transformation.
Sure. Yeah, the word Gnosticism can be pretty confusing depending on whether you look at it from an academic standpoint or whether you look at it from a spiritual standpoint. Traditionally, it was viewed as some type of Christian heresy. And then over the years, through all the research, particularly with the discovery of the Nag Hammadi text, which were a large grouping of heretical texts, they found that it was much more than just Christianity, kind of predated that. So you even have some kind of mystery cults or pagan cults. And so now the term has a much more loose meaning. When I use the term Gnosticism, it typically means some type of spiritual practice which provides the practitioner a direct personal experience of what we would call the numinous or the divine. And so that would be the most basic thing. So you can have a Hindu Gnosticism, a Sufi Gnosticism, a Christian Gnosticism, all those things, as long as those systems were providing the practitioner with a direct connection to some kind of divine experience, not just from a book, not just from a sermon, but some kind of direct, visceral, spiritual experience.
Nice. So thank you for clarifying that.
It can be confusing. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think before we go into the discussion of Ayurveda and Gnosticism, it's important for people to understand the clarity of that subject.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what I wanted to also talk about is I'm interested in your opinion on the role of Ayurveda, specifically Ayurvedic nutrition and lifestyle in the application of this catalyst of alchemaic change in Gnosticism.
Yeah, that's an important question. And I think that we can actually look at Ayurvedic medicine, honestly, as a type of Gnostic medicine at a fundamental level, because what Ayurveda is seeking to do is to reconnect the person, the patient, the practitioner with the cosmos, and specifically with the five elements, nature, and the interrelationship between macrocosm and the microcosm, so that even in the Sraka Samhita, it talks about the human body contains the universe, and the universe is a reflection of the human body. So Ayurvedic medicine, the science of longevity, is actually an encoding of nature's intelligence. And so as we learn nature, we learn about ourselves. And as we learn about how we are truly connected on all the five elements, then that really is a deep interior journey about who we are, and hopefully a spiritual awakening. On a fundamental level, Ayurveda was about a physical transformation, a pathway to health and vitality, but also a pathway to the revelation of the Atman, or the self with a capital S, in the traditional sense.
Yeah, thank you. Because I noticed that a lot of the other podcasts and writings I've heard and read from you, there's really this heavy focus on taking care of the physical body.
Yes.
Whether it's, you know, physical fitness, whether it's through lifting weights, whether it's through nutrition,
right,
whether it's through Ayurveda. And I know we both have mutual interest in Ayurveda, and I think that it is an underutilized tool, and that through that Gnostic transformation, sometimes that's the missing key, is the ultimate maintenance of the physical body.
Without a doubt. I think Ayurveda ideally should reconnect the person to a relationship with their physical body. And then the physical body, of course, assumes that we're talking about the mental body as well too, and the interrelationship between the two. And I think Ayurveda should provide that. It should be more, Ayurveda should not just be like a list of someone's dosha and then a list of herbal medicines. Those have their placement in it, but it's more important about the daily lifestyle regimen, the seasonal regimen, and then how that's connected to nutrition that allows the body to become essentially a laboratory. Our body becomes this sacred space. That's the title for my next book, Sacred Body, Sacred Space. Our body should become a sacred ritual ground for our journey through this lifetime. And then so our body is a body of karma. We have to live out our prarabdha karma in this lifetime, no matter what. And so Ayurveda provides this blueprint so that we can harmonize ourselves with the environment, with the seasons, with our particular mental constitution, physical constitution, and to form some type of balanced relationship so that we can maximize our genetic potential. It's essentially an epigenetics, is what it is. Ayurveda was the original functional medicine. Ayurveda was the original epigenetics and nutrigenomics, about how what we eat, what we think, and how we act, and how we treat our body is all directly connected to the expression of our genetic potential.
Yeah. And, you know, I often wonder if people understand, I know that we understand, the profound significance of how Ayurveda can make all of those conditions just right.
Yes.
In all the layers of our existence, so that we're not just thriving, we're not just achieving, we're not just doing, but we're literally transforming into our highest potential.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a huge point. And that's something that I often get sad when I don't see Ayurvedic practitioners emphasizing that enough. And so Ayurveda sure can be help someone lose weight, or of course it with the Panchakarma, you see it often pushed for cleansing and things like that. And those have their role, but essentially it should be to maximize someone's ability to consistently transform through their whole trajectory of their life, so that from their youth up to their old age, that they're able to mature spiritually. Because our lifetime should be a journey of maturation and maximization of our spiritual potential, ideally. Everyone's karma is unique, so wherever they take that pathway, but Ayurveda is always there waiting to help someone reach those higher levels.
Yeah, and I suppose we're like fine wine. If we don't keep aging it properly, we just becomes stagnant.
There's so many analogies between winemaking and health and vitality in Ayurveda, without a doubt. So I think we see that with the idea of alchemy, and all the dhatus transforming, but it's the same thing with wine. Absolutely. That's a great connection.
Yeah. So I wanted to also bring up for the listeners, now while I was reading your book, Entering the Desert, you beautifully described the process of creating the sacramental vision. And I wanted to take a short passage from page 92 of Entering the Desert and just share it with the listener.
Oh, excellent.
The cell becomes an alchemical furnace via the heat of the inhabitant's practice, burning away all traces of terrestrial vitiations and conditionings. It is an incubatory environment for the primordial awakening of the gift of desert gnosis, the sacramental vision. And when I read that, it really resonated with me. And I wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit more about, you know, the creation of that healthy physical vessel, but also the healthy spiritual vessel in order to open up that sacramental vision more and bring out that conscious transformation.
Yeah, thank you for reading that quote. That's a key idea in Entering the Desert. And the vision, the idea of sacramental vision was deeply inspired by the idea of Agni. And so that incubatory heat is tapas. That's our spiritual practice or our physical practice, all of that together. And so Ayurveda kind of provides that alchemical environment for us to awaken our inner flame, the Agni. We want to awaken the inner flame on a digestive level to maximize our digestion, but we also want to awaken it on a pranic level. So we maximize our awareness. And then also this is, we even at a deeper level, on a spiritual level, where it can transform into a deep spiritual awakening, which is the sacramental vision. The sacramental vision is essentially the awakening of the mana agni, the mental agni, the mental perception, our buddhi, which provides us with basically we can differentiate maya from cosmic reality. We're basically wiping the mirror clean on our mental vision, and we're able to clear out avidya. And we go from, to quote the Upanishads, we go from darkness into light, you know, from death to immortality. So the idea of sacramental vision was inspired by my studies in Gnosticism and the idea that we can turn the flesh into a sacrament. We can turn the senses into a sacrament. That's essentially what we're seeking to do with Tantra, is the all the senses, the indriyas, we want to kind of transform them into something which is radiating out, and then radiating out our perception of reality, and we're able to distill an experience like a bee goes to each flower and distills the essence, and we're able to distill that and then take that back and then transform it into some kind of sacred nectar, which in Ayurvedic medicine we would call ojas. That's the idea. But the idea is that we are able to live life on a fundamental level, deeply inspired, deeply connected to a passion and an inspiration that fuels us throughout our entire life. And that hopefully inspires us to be very healthy on a physical level, you know, to keep the body. Because if our body is healthy, typically our brain is going to be healthy and vice versa. And then that helps us maximize our genetic expression. So hopefully the sacramental vision, it's kind of a lifelong journey. Some people can awaken it through youth. You know, some people instantly have it. Other people cultivate it through the practice of yoga or through the practice of martial arts or, you know, some type of Gnostic practice. Other times it might just be karmic when it happens. Sometimes it happens through visits to sacred places. You know, someone takes a pilgrimage to some place or is in nature, or someone encounters their guru or a teacher. It kind of unveils that. So it's a very mysterious process, but it is something that we should all hopefully be shooting for in life.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
Another question that just keeps looping back into my mind is, for individuals who are perhaps neglecting their nutrition and the balance of their macrocosm and microcosm, neglecting their physical body as far as maintaining the proper distribution of the tissues, the dhatus, the malas, the wastes, etc. Can the journey towards awakening the sacramental vision be confusing if not even perilous for their well-being.
Yes, absolutely. That's a very important comment to make and to discuss, that I think that someone, in most cases, that it should be kind of a slow, methodical process. Because we know that through the study of yoga, if you have, for example, we could use the idea of the awakening of the Kundalini, that is often not a pleasurable experience from typical standards of what we call pleasure or happiness. And we can see this now with all these articles that starts to say, or they're starting to say, like, maybe meditation is dangerous. You know, maybe meditation's not good for you. And that's all kind of couched in this idea that we were supposed to just meditate and just be happy. It was almost kind of reflective of the Christian prosperity gospel that, you know, God wants you to be rich all the time and happy and never sad. And we know that a spiritual awakening can often be, it can be very inspiring, of course, but it's like a birth. It can also be bloody and messy and painful. And it's just part of the process. And so I do think that the sacramental vision should be hopefully a kind of a balanced awakening. And that's why I often suggest people, like, that's the point of using Ayurveda, is that if we can keep our body in balance, which we, and our mind in balance, and if we use the vocabulary of Ayurveda, that keeping the doshas in balance, if we do that, and then we form a very nice balanced relationship with the environment and nature, that's very conducive for a balanced awakening. It just makes it, it doesn't mean that it doesn't guarantee that it's not going to be painful, but it definitely could make it more likely to be what I call digestible. Because for an awakening to happen, or a spiritual experience that we have to be able to digest it. And if you can't digest it, some people get trauma from it. Just like someone who can't digest a life experience, they get PTSD. They just loop it in their mind and they can't get over that. Even though the time frame is gone, the pranic body doesn't necessarily function on linear time. It functions on a different perception of time. And so that digestion is a big part. And so that's, for me, that's why I often work through Ayurveda, typically some type of Agni Ayurveda, which we really seek to kind of strengthen and awaken all the different fires first. And then as they go through it, that's ideal. But sometimes people just, it just happens. And then hopefully they have a teacher or a tradition to help them understand. And that's also the most fundamental reason why having a tradition, having a teacher or a mentor is so important, so that when you, if you do have a spiritual awakening that is confusing or scary, that you have someone or someplace to go to for advice. It's very important.
Very, very important. Definitely firsthand. I thank you so much for discussing all these subjects with us. And I hope that people have a chance to read your books.
Yeah, yeah.
Desert, as well as Cave of the Numinous and Cult of Golgotha. And your upcoming one, what is it called again?
That'll be Tantric Physics Volume 2, Sacred Body, Sacred Space.
Oh, beautiful. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely.
And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Take care. Namaskar.